Hello,
Hello.
Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hey,
How
Mark.
you doing? You good?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm very well. I'm very well. Hi, guys and girls. It's Mark Sams here. Today we have a really special guest. His name is Joel Com, and Joel is a long-time entrepreneur with a diverse and interesting, successful professional background. He's a talented internet marketer, a well-known author, and a man behind one of the biggest apps landed on the Apple App Store, which is called iFart. Yeah, that's what I said, iFart. Now, there are a few entrepreneurs that show so much diversity in their capacity as Joel does. But his willingness to tackle a wide variety of projects has certainly paid off for him. The real beauty lies in the fact that Joel is willing to share his knowledge with the world in the hope that he can motivate, inspire other would-be entrepreneurs. So in 2004, after testing and tweaking various methods of earning money with Google AdSense, Joel wrote two books, two brilliant books, What Google Never Told You About Making Money with AdSense and The AdSense Code. That later went on and made it to the third place in Amazon's bestsellers, as well as top spots in the New York Times and Business Week. This is one example of how Joel shares his vast knowledge with anyone, and basically what his main focus is really just inspiring people and allowing people to find what's within them and actually translate that into a business. Joel also is a regular speaker, and he spoke at some of the biggest internet marketing events and conferences. And he's actually a creator of television and web shows. So he's done a ton of things. So he's well positioned to be here today. Joel, thanks for coming to the show. And how are you doing?
Oh, well, I'm doing great, and thank you for the introduction. It almost makes me sound impressive. And if I didn't know better, that I'm just a regular guy just trying to find interesting and fun things to do and make a difference, I would think that I'm something I'm not. And I really want everybody to know that they have this greatness in them and can accomplish some really tremendous things if they're willing to take risks. And that's a big part of it.
Okay, excellent. Well, what I'd like to start with is really sort of going back to the roots of how and why you started an online business, and this is like a twofold question, I guess. So how and why you started an online business, and what you was doing just beforehand?
It's a really good question. I love going back to the beginning because when people discover how I got started, it helps them to believe that they can do it as well.
Excellent.
Let me preface it by saying this, Mark. I believe that the businesses that we run must stem from something that we're passionate about, right? Something that we're excited about, that we're knowledgeable, that somehow connects to our own talents, our skills, our own abilities, our personality. And for me, I didn't really set out to create a business. Having been into computers for a long time, ever since the TRS-80 Model 1 computer, that really dates me because now we're going back to 1979. Ever
Well,
since I encountered the first computer
oh,
and
seriously,
got into it.
that's like 2 years before I was born. I'm like 34
Now I really feel old, thanks.
now.
Having been into computers, I was also a computer gamer. I've always been into computer games. I grew up, when the first video games came out in the arcades, Space Invaders and Pong and Asteroids and Pac-Man. I was there for all of that, as many of your listeners were as well. And I had started a local software review magazine, a print publication, because one reason, not because I was thinking about making a bunch of money, but because I wanted free games. At that point in my life, I was, a young married and small children, and money was tight. I was a DJ working for myself. I was still an entrepreneur. I had a mobile DJ business, and I would do weddings and bar mitzvahs and class reunions. And I also worked for a couple nationally syndicated radio ministries, Christian programming that I edited the program on a Mac using Pro Tools. And when I decided to that I wanted some free games, I decided to put together this newsletter, and I contacted some of the large software publishers, and very nervously, thinking I was going to get rejected, told them who I was and that I was the editor of the Dallas-Fort Worth Software Review. And before I knew it, software began appearing on my doorstep on a regular basis. It was like Christmas every day. It was amazing.
Wow.
And as a result, I created this magazine, and really just did one edition of it before one of my writers, before a writer that I met came along and said, instead of doing it this way, why don't you publish it in HTML and put it on the World Wide Web? Well, this was mid-1994, and I had no idea what he was talking about. It wasn't until January of 95 that I attended the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and that's when I discovered what the web was really all about. And so by July of 95, I decided to transition my publication to a website. It looked like a fun, cool thing to do. And that's how I got started, and that's how I have one of the first 18,000 sites in the world belongs
to me.
Seriously? Yes, sir.
Wow, that's amazing. And so after actually coming out of that newsletter, I would assume that you wasn't like an expert at marketing straight away. So what sort of things were you experimenting with, and how did you develop? Like, what happened next?
Well, you know, I really didn't consider myself an internet marketer until the AdSense book came out in 2004, 2005. Mm-hmm. Up until that point, I was just trying to create things that were interesting. Little did I know that I was marketing as I was doing it. Mm-hmm. And when I launched this site, a couple interesting things happened, but the one I'll really focus on is because of my enjoyment of games, my webmaster had run across a site called Springerspan.com, mm-hmm. and it was a site that was in beta, one of the first multiplayer game sites in the world. It was programmed in Java by a man named Aaron Jacopi, mm-hmm. who was a grad student at University of California, San Diego. And Aaron had a few games up on his site, Bridge, Hearts, Spades, Chess, Checkers, and his friends were beta testing this multiplayer site. Remember, we're back in 1997. There was not multiplayer gaming like there is now. This was very early.
Yeah. Mm. Well, this must have been a massive thing back then.
Well, well, at the time, he only had his friends testing it, so nobody really knew about it. And I came along and I said, hey, why don't we partner on this? This looks really cool, what you've created here. How about you focus on growing it? I'll market it. We'll give it a new name and a new brand and see what we can do with it. Mm-hmm. So he said yes. We called it ClassicGames.com, and we grew. And he continued coding it, and we gave it a nice facelift, and had 16 games. And at one point, we had somewhere around 500 people at one time playing our games, which back in 1997 was really cool. And anyway, long story short, the site got acquired by a little company known as Yahoo, and they purchased it from us. It was my first seven-figure deal. And today, Yahoo Games is one of the largest game sites on the web.
That's
thousands
amazing.
And thousands of people go every day to play there. So that's fun.
Did you know back then that that was like your first form of an online joint venture then, hooking up with that guy and you handled the marketing while he handled the development aspect of things?
You know, I didn't think about it. It wasn't until years later that I thought, wow, this is a perfect example of, you know, what I teach people. Mm-hmm. And I just did what came naturally. I saw something that was interesting to me that I knew I wanted to be a part of, and I explored the opportunities. I just released my new podcast, and I'm not sure when, you know, people will be listening to this, but the subject matter was how to discover opportunity. Mm-hmm. And what I share in the message is that I look for doors and windows. I like to view opportunity as doors and windows, and I don't go kicking down doors. Mm-hmm. There's too many doors and windows that are just open, just a crack. Some of them are wide open.
Slightly ajar.
Right. And so whenever I see something that's interesting to me, I'll investigate that opportunity and see if there's something there. And again throughout my career, I could point to that attitude, that mode of behavior as being credited with leading to some really amazing things.
Can we drill down into that a little bit? Like, because obviously a lot of people come across different opportunities where there could be some potential, but maybe they have fear of approaching a company or fear or not sure how to go about actually setting something up. So could you maybe give us some case studies or examples of how you've gone about it and actually made something like that happen?
Well, first of all, opportunity is not really opportunity unless it somehow connects with you in some way, right? Just because somebody says, I have a great business opportunity for you and we can make a lot of money, that's great. There's no shortage of things that you could throw yourself into that you can make money with. For me, it all begins with interest. I have to care about what I'm pursuing. If I don't care about it, then I'm not going to really invest myself fully in it, which means I'm not going to do a really good job, growing that business. I'm pretty much setting myself up for failure. So I look for things that are interesting to me that somehow tie in to a current passion or my skill set, talents that I might have, my personality. And again, as I look through the various successes that I've had over the years, each one of them stemmed from that. For example, I've discovered online shopping very early and was a fan of Amazon and learned about affiliate marketing. And I realized that as I enjoyed saving money by using the coupons that various merchants would offer, that other people would as well. So out of my own newfound love for online shopping and saving money, I created one of the first coupon bargain hunting sites on the web called DealOfDay.com and launched that in 1999, I believe. Sold it a couple of years ago, which is always a nice thing to do to have your exit. But for many years, it was quite a revenue generator. I was helping a lot of people save a lot of money, providing content, and I generated quite a bit of revenue through affiliate programs and Google AdSense. So, in fact, it was the site that made me the most money with AdSense, which gave me the authority to teach people about AdSense. Isn't it interesting how one thing leads to another?
Of course. No, definitely. Like, I've actually acquired a job once where I think I read a Perry Marshall book on AdWords, and because of the knowledge I learned from that, even though I hadn't never placed an ad, I was able to get a sales job within a company with that knowledge, talking about keywords within the title, in the body text, on your landing page and stuff like that. And they just thought, oh, he knows what he's talking about, and they got me the job. So yeah, it's weird how one thing leads to another.
And that's remarkable. I love stories like that, because what you did is you investigated opportunity and you equipped yourself with a skill that you didn't realize would pay off as it did. And that's what our lives are, right? We build on through our experiences, whether we deem them successful or unsuccessful. I think every experience is a successful experience, because if we learn from it, somehow we can apply it to the next thing in our lives.
Very true, very true, definitely. Obviously, you and me know that it's very hard to become an overnight success. So can you tell me about some of the difficulties and mistakes that you've made early on in your career and still have made till today, and so that people can learn from it?
Sure, I can tell you a mistake that I've made many times, and I am making it even today. I'm doing too much.
Okay.
I, like many entrepreneurs, suffer from bright, shiny object syndrome. Mm-hmm. I tell people to be focused and to make sure that they don't get distracted in what they're doing so that they can have the type of success that they want. And yet you would just be amazed at how many things I'm trying to do at once. Now, the difference is I already have revenue streams, and my lifestyle and business doesn't depend on the success of one project or another, whereas other people are trying to get started and they're trying to do a number of different things, but they don't have the financial means to do all those things, in which case that can be a really bad thing. So
yeah,
not getting distracted is something that I still do. I could probably have more success in some significant areas if I would focus more on a few things, but I just love I love multitasking. I love having a lot of different things going on. Now, I can look through my career and point to times where getting distracted and doing too many things did cost me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you'd think I would have learned my lesson, but at least I know that I haven't learned, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. Without a doubt. So, like, when When you're actually thinking about creating a new project, creating a new site, what are some of the criteria for you deciding on whether a project is worth going after and developing?
Well, you know, there we go. Is that better?
Yep, we're fine. We're good.
Okay. Great. Edit right here. You know, ideas in and of themselves don't have value until they become materialized, until they're executed. Mm-hmm. I get people frequently coming to me and saying, I've got a great idea for an app. It's going to sell millions. And because you've done so well with apps, I'll give you that idea if you'll develop it and share half the revenue with me, mm-hmm. which I find comical because I have enough ideas of my own that I can develop and keep 100%. Revenue. Mm-hmm. One thing people need to realize is just because you have an idea, it doesn't mean you have a business. It means you have an idea. Until you execute it and execute it successfully, it's not necessarily even a good idea, right? It's all about the execution. So when I think of ideas, I have a more careful, methodical thought process now than I used to. I used to jump into whatever whim, you know, whatever struck my fancy, and especially when I had a team, and I would say, go build this site, which made them crazy because they were on one project, and I would totally take them off task and put them on something else, and, mm-hmm. You know, people like to know what it is they're doing and stay on task, and when you're an entrepreneur that's a little ADD like myself, it's very easy to pull people off task, which is probably a good thing that I've decided to not have a big team anymore and just work with contractors. I think it makes everybody, including myself, happier. But I make sure that whatever it is that I'm doing resonates with something in my heart to begin with. I don't want to just pursue something that can make money. If I'm just going to be money motivated, when those hard times come and the difficult parts of running that business arise, if my heart's not in it, I'm not going to be very motivated to see it through. So I like to align myself with projects and products and services that are aligned with my heart, that I know what I'm going to create is going to have an impact, is going to make a difference. It's either going to inspire people, it's going to train them, it's going to entertain them, it's going to engage them, it's going to help them in some way. And so before I enter into doing anything, I've got to ask myself that question. Then I'll ask, okay, will this make money? Is mm-hmm. this a profitable venture? Am I doing something altruistic here? Is this a philanthropic effort? Mm-hmm. Or am I seeking to build a business with this? And if those if both of those qualities are met, then I just need to ask, do I have the time to execute this properly? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to do, as I've done many times, start a project and leave it done, halfway? And if that's the case, then why start at all?
Of course. Yeah, definitely. Now that's good. And that's, consistent with, your answer before about like your passion. It's got to start from somewhere that you're passionate about, something that you've actually got an interest in, and it juices you, excites you, sort of thing. So, yeah, I get that. That makes a lot of sense. But another thing I wanted to sort of find out is you've generated millions and millions of visitors to a number of different projects. Like, so for somebody that's just starting out and maybe doesn't have the same leverage, budget, and reach as you do, how would you, let's say like a family member came to you and they said, look, I don't want no handouts. I don't want you to hold my hand to do this. But I want to know how to get traffic to my new project, or attract an audience or get a really strong following or tribe. Like, what would be the first things that you would teach them to allow them to do that without just saying, okay, I'll send out a broadcast for you or I'll connect you with these people. They wanted to do it by themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me first start. That's a really good question. Let me clear up any misconceptions. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that with a budget, you know, I've done a lot of advertising mm-hmm. to get traffic to my site. That has never been the case. There okay. has never been a time where I have spent a significant amount of money to bring attention to a product. You know, at most, I've done press releases, mm-hmm. which, you know, cost a few hundred dollars. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of all my successes have come from creating a story that resonates with people, that goes viral in and of itself. it's now I'm not saying don't advertise. I think that there's a lot of benefit to doing that. I'm just saying I have not leveraged advertising to grow my business, which is really, you know, pretty kind of interesting given that I've made a lot of money off of Google's advertising program, but I've made it off of the publisher side, not of the advertiser side. Part of the reason is I don't know what I'm doing with it.
Okay, yeah.
I've messed with AdWords before, but I have not dedicated time. I am not, just because I'm an AdSense expert, don't assume I'm an AdWords expert. I'm not. I'm the last guy you want to come with to find about to write, you know, your ads and get them to convert. For that, I would defer to somebody like Perry Marshall, you know, who really knows Google AdWords. So,
So, what story?
Yeah, a story is so important. The story is central to the human experience. When we look at the TV shows and the films and the books that we read and the blogs that we read, those that draw us back again and again are telling a story in a way that captures our hearts and our minds and our interests so that we will engage. So when I look back at the successes I've had, I can tie a story that was told to each one of them. I mean, let's, you know, you mentioned the app that that I created in the introduction, the iFart app. Hopefully it won't be the thing that I, you know, go down in history known for, but if it is, I accept that that's my lot in life, and hopefully people will remember me for something else as well. The app itself was a simple novelty app. The reason it got the attention that it did was twofold, and both of these points focus on the story. First of all, before the app was released, another app was rejected by the Apple Store, and a story was on CNET. The app was called Pull My Finger, and in October of 2008, we were just getting ready to submit our app when this story broke on CNET, that Apple's rejecting these novelty flatulence applications. Well, we were pretty disappointed because we were just getting ready to submit our app and thought, well, what's the point? They're not accepting these. They're just going to reject it. We wasted our time and money, and I guess we'll just be able to play with it, you know, in the office, and that's it.
That pretty much make most people quit if like CNET's breaking a story that be like, oh, what's the point?
Definitely. Well, we had we had other things going on at the time, so I said, you know what, don't submit it. Let's just sit on it right now, pun intended. And so we did, and in early November or early December, I thought, you know, what's the harm? What's the worst thing that happens? Apple rejects it, right? So we submitted it. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. Didn't get rejected. The longer it sat there in the queue, the more hope that we had. And I believe it was December 12th. That we got the notice that the app was released into the App Store, along with Pull My Finger and two other fart apps. Well, because there was already a story tied to the rejection of the app previously, I submitted a news story how Apple was now approving these novelty apps. Well, that was interesting to some in the media, and immediately news started getting out. And because this went more to Apple's policies than it did to the app itself, it was just interesting that this was a stupid novelty app and now your phone can fart, right? So they liked that aspect as well. Well, as the app started getting out there and sales started increasing, I found it interesting to see what the rank to sales numbers, how they matched up. For example, at that point, nobody knew if you were number 200 in the entertainment category of the App Store, how many sales were you making a day? What if you were number 75? What if you were number 20 overall? What did it mean? Nobody knew. And so I started tracking my numbers and blogging them on my blog at joelcom.com. And then I wrote a press release and sent to the media, here's some behind-the-scenes information on sales to rank. So I was able to share data that was interesting to the developer community. Well, as a result, TechCrunch and Mashable and VentureBeat and other publications published that information, which, of course, drove more sales. And as I continued publishing more data, there was more and more sales. And I think Christmas Day, we hit number one in the world. We made 39,000 sales. And, of course, I then took that and fashioned a story around that and sent that to the media.
Wow.
So all around the world, everybody was talking about iFart and how it was a, you know, an explosive app. And of course, all the puns, you know, rose up. all the puns bubbled up and let loose.
Yeah.
So it was great fun, and it stayed at number one for 3 weeks. And now that story about the stories becomes another story for me to tell. Right?
Oh,
with
I
each
see,
success,
yeah.
Now I have now the story of how that happened. All the stories that made up that the success of iFart now are a story in and of itself. And of course there's much more that follows after it, because to this day it's almost 5 years since the release of iFart. Every day it still sells without me doing any marketing, anywhere from 25 to 60 or 70 or so copies. And stories will pop up in the media. For example, last year, Rolling Stone did a cover story. Their interview was with George Clooney. Well, when Rolling Stone does an interview with George Clooney, all of the media outlets will pick up and pull a highlight out of that story to talk about this news and the Rolling Stone interview. Well, the highlight that they picked up out of this 10-page article was that George Clooney likes iFart.
Seriously?
And so again, a story that, see, it's not about the direct hit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about this product is so great because it's finding a way to connect with people in an interesting and unique way that gives you a far better likelihood of having an editor, a blogger, a reporter.
Can
pick
that stuff
up
be
and
planned?
Pictures.
Can that stuff, can you plan to do that? Because the way that sounds, it sounds like it happened. Like you released your app, and then something happened, and you built upon what happened, and so on and so forth. But beforehand, you had no mental knowing that you was going to be able to do that, and that another story would come out, and that you'd build a story upon that, and so on and so forth. So
right, it's good to have plans. You should definitely have a business and a marketing plan for what you're going to do, because those do work. When there are things you can do to execute that have a much better chance of being successful. But I have found that spontaneity, the ability to make a quick 90-degree turn on a hairpin turn, right, turn on a dime, and land where you want to is essential for entrepreneurs. Let me give you another case in point. We created an app called the Ka-Ching Button app to go along with a book that I released in 2009 called Ka-Ching, How to Run an Online Business That Pays. And on the cover of the book is this button. It looks like a Staples Easy button, only it's green with a dollar sign and makes a ka-ching sound when you push it. And I thought this would be a great novelty tie-in. Well, one of the things we did is we also made an application that was a button that ka-chinged when you push it, and that's all it did. Mm-hmm. Only you could also display the dollar as like a yen or a pound sign, so that is more international.
Yeah.
Well, we submitted this to the App Store, and Apple rejected the application. They said it had minimal user functionality. So I thought, most people would be like, oh no, they've rejected it. Well, maybe we'll appeal it. But, we're done. It's not going to get in the App Store. So how do I create a story out of this? Well, at that time, and still today, but especially in the pioneering time of the App Store, developers had no guarantee of whether or not their app's going to be accepted into the App Store. And it takes time and money and resources to create these things. And Apple wasn't being very transparent in telling us what it was they were looking for. So I thought, instead of just sending an appeal to the iTunes App Store people, I'm going to go right to the top. So I grabbed my video guy and I said, we're going to shoot a video and it's going to be an appeal to Steve Jobs. And
serious.
I made a I think it was a 3 or 4 minute video called an Apple developer appeals to Steve Jobs, and we put this violin music to it, and I made the case that Apple has been accepting other apps with minimal user functionality, and why not ours? And if you go on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/JoelCom, and just search for Steve Jobs, it'll come up, and you'll see this video, which I then released to the media, and it's to date, it's had over 50,000 views, and the most interesting part is a week after the video was released, the app was approved into the App Store. And so I like to think, I like to think in my heart of hearts that because Apple watches everything that comes across the radar, that somebody in marketing caught this and that it got passed on to the top. You know, somebody made a video for Steve Jobs. So I like to think, and I'm going to stick with the story, that that he saw the video, because a week later, the app was approved into the App Store and it had a happy ending. So again, this is just another example of how finding a unique spin in telling your story is a way to get attention. And there's no way I could have planned for this. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the app was going to get rejected. And when it did, I thought, how do I spin this in a way that can bring attention to what looks like failure?
Makes a lot of sense. Where did you learn to think like that?
boy, I don't know how to answer that.
Sorry, I just wondered, like, because not everybody would sort of have that mentality or that sort of vigor to keep going and find new creative ways of approaching a problem.
Yeah, it's just who I am. It's just how God made me and wired me. And I know we're all made differently, but I try to play to my strengths. For some people, planning and having a plan and a blueprint and executing that plan flawlessly is their gift. Mm-hmm. I don't have those same strengths. I fly by the seat of my pants. Mm-hmm. I like the opportunities to arise that are something challenging for me. And mm-hmm. so a rejection of something that I've worked on, that I believed in, is a challenge. It's like saying, oh no, you don't. I'm saying, oh yes, I do. And here's how. Those are when you come up against the wall and somebody tells you you can't, or there's rejection, I find that is where the best opportunities arise. When, let me go back to iFart for a moment, Mark. Mm-hmm. Because this other app, Pull My Finger, was the one that had attention first, and we came along and knocked them completely off the charts. They were rising up right at the beginning because they announced that they were approved also, but then our app came along, and with the stories I was telling and the quality of the app, they just fell off. Well, they blamed me in my marketing for their demise and sent me a threatening letter from their attorney saying, we want $50,000 because of the damage you've caused us and our brand. I actually used the phrase, pull my finger, in my marketing, which is fine because it's not trademarked. It's mm-hmm. it's a term that's in the Creative Commons. Anybody can use it. Mm-hmm. And I also, I linked in a press release the term, pull my finger, to my site, which mm-hmm. is totally legit because we actually use the words pull my finger in the app. Mm-hmm. Well, they were upset about that and wanted somebody to blame, so they sent me this threatening letter. Well, most people might go, oh, no, what are we going to do about this? Or we need to lawyer up and this could be bad. Maybe we should just pay them. And I said, oh, this is great. And I wrote up a press release and I went out to the media and told the media how we were being attacked by this company for triumphing over them, and that I filed with a Colorado district judge. They were in Florida, mm-hmm. and I can't remember the legal term for what it was we filed, but basically the layman's way of saying it would be the judge was telling them to go away. Mm-hmm. Well, the media loved it, and they talked about, you know, fart wars. Right?
Oh, wow.
Well, as a result, not only did it get a lot of attention for both of our apps, which led to more sales for both of our apps, but it led to a story on Jon Stewart's Daily Show on the Comedy Central, wow. which, you know, you can't buy that.
Yeah, no, it's so true.
But by taking the risk and saying, okay, so you just threw a lemon at me. Let's make some, fart-flavored lemonade out of this mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. And it worked out. Now, it doesn't always work. It does not always work. But, you know, you have to get up there and try. And so that's what I continue to do, is figure out how do I take the circumstances and use it to the greatest advantage to get exposure.
That makes a lot of sense. So that kind of answers my next question about how you stay current and relevant. Because,
Well, you know, current and relevant. I don't even know what that means. It's impossible to stay current. the fast pace of the internet and all the new sites and all the new technologies, I don't have the time nor the desire to pour myself so far into it that I have no life anymore. Mm-hmm. So I've resigned myself to working how I want to work, the way I want to work, consuming the information that's interesting to me, and letting the rest go by. Because it's like, imagine trying to follow your Twitter stream all day long. You know, even if you follow, you know, just 1,000 people, you can never follow it. It's just, it's impossible. Well, now combine that with all the other social sites and all the news outlets and all the information coming our way. So, you know, I don't know that I am current. Mm-hmm. Relevant is different. Relevance comes from what's interesting to me now. What can I do now that can have an impact and lead the way and make a change in the way things are done or change somebody's life in a positive way? And that comes from, again, following what's interesting to me right now. Mm-hmm. And I've been fortunate enough to been on the cutting edge of a number of projects because I saw something that was interesting to me. It was like the new toy. Oh, this looks like fun. I want to play with this. Mm-hmm. Let's see what I can do with this. And so it was like that with Twitter. I played with Twitter very early on. I remember when I wrote the book Twitter Power, I had 5,000 followers, and everybody thought, oh, my gosh, how do you get 5,000 followers? That's incredible. But because I was playing with it early on, I got to write the book and become an expert. Same thing with AdSense. AdSense was interesting to me. I needed to monetize my sites because I was still recovering from the dot-com bust that happened in 2000 and had to lay off everybody, including myself, and wasn't making money. And so I had motivation to test all the different monetization strategies that were popping up, and AdSense was one of them. So because I was so motivated, I figured out how to make it work, and then I shared my strategies with others. And as it turned out, became a book and a bestseller book, and I became known as the AdSense guy. So being relevant really, again, goes back to what is tied into where I'm at right now in my life, what's important to me. Mm-hmm. And I hope that as I go forward, there will be more opportunities for me to pioneer out into an area that others have not yet tapped into and hopefully lead the way that will help other people succeed in that arena.
Excellent. So I see that you've recently rebranded your blog, and it looks great and very refreshing. What sort of new changes are coming up, and what plans do you have for the future?
Thank you for asking and noticing that. I've actually just come out of a semi-sabbatical of sorts, a number of circumstances in my life that started in 2010, both personally and professionally, led me to decide I needed a break. And so over the period of a year or so, I let go of my entire team, fantastic team, but it wasn't working anymore. Mm-hmm. And I sold a couple of my big sites off, and I took some time to work on myself. Not so much focusing on business while I still did have some sites, but more focusing on my own health, emotional, spiritual, physical. I lost a lot of weight. I dealt with some issues that I needed to deal with personally and went through a period of transition. And so this year has been my comeback, if you will. I actually wrote a blog entry earlier this year titled "I'm Pregnant" to get people's attention. And of course, the message was that I'm pregnant with possibility because I'm looking at my life and the people around me and business and the world in a somewhat different way. You know, challenges in your life have the ability to either crush you or transform you. I chose to take the transformational route, and I'm very happy right now. And I want to really, the branding is four things. Because as I went into this cave, if you will, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do or who I wanted to be when I grew up. But what I've discovered is the gifts that I have are the gifts that God has given me. And those gifts are communication and inspiring people and creating. So anyway, whatever it is that I'm going to talk about or write about, I'm always going to be an author. I'm always going to be a speaker. I'm always going to be an entrepreneur, and I'm always going to seek to help people as a consultant. And those are my brandings. And right now I'm working on a couple books that will hopefully accomplished those goals, and I've recently started my own podcast, the JoltCom Show. I stopped doing it in December 2010, and I decided with the new show that there wouldn't be guests, that I would just be sharing what's relevant on my heart and mind. And so I do a number of segments, and one of them focuses on life or inspiration or relationships, and the other one will focus on something about business. And so I want to, because this is where I'm at personally, this is what I'm going to share with people. I'm working on a couple of other projects that I'm not prepared to discuss at this time, but anybody can keep up with what I'm doing on my blog at joltcom.com. And of course, the JoltCom Show podcast is on iTunes, and there's a few episodes out there, and I'm recording a new one every week. The feedback's been fantastic.
Okay, excellent. So I'll make sure that I link that up in the blog as well, so that people can get over there nice and easy. And if people want to say thanks to you for this interview, like, do you have a Twitter handle or anything like that?
You know, I am remarkably so the only JoltCom in the world. Out of 7 billion people, I have not yet discovered anybody else with my name. So if you search JoltCom on Google, you'll get about a million results from all the pages that I've appeared on. Mm-hmm. And if you go on any of the social sites, I am unmissable. So, yes, I'm at JoltCom. I'm JoltCom on Facebook. I'm JoltCom on LinkedIn, on Google+. I'm everywhere.
That made our research really easy as well.
Yeah, I would love for people to connect with me. And, of course, I invite them again to come to my blog, because that's like inviting them over to my house. Come on over, pull up a chair, read some of what I've got to say, and then have a conversation with me. Let's talk.
Excellent. And do you have any parting advice for any new internet marketers or people that are running a business, and to help them grow and expand what they're doing?
Be an innovator. Don't chase after what somebody else has already done. I've seen what happens when you go down that route. After the success of my iPhone application, there was 200 copycats that showed up in the App Store, all thinking they were going to piggyback on my success. And maybe one or two of them made some sales, but the vast majority were failures. So be an original. You are an original. Follow the passions, talents, skills, abilities, the personality, and the person that you are, the person that God made you to be, and be true to that person, and don't be afraid to take some risks and tell your story. Nobody is interested in a world of sameness. People are looking for interesting people that are willing to stand out. So take that risk.
Definitely. That makes a lot of sense. Well, Joel, thanks so much for coming on to the show today. It's been much appreciated. You've dropped some amazing gems on us and really given us some insight, and also been really frank with your answers, which I really appreciate. As I say to you, as I say all the time, guys, it's not just about just listening to this interview and thinking, that sounds nice. It's about taking what makes sense to you. Maybe not everything makes sense to you, but taking what does make sense to you and using it to grow and expand your empire and what you're doing. So that's it from us today. My name is Mark Sams. This is Income Society. That's IncomeSociety.com. Joel, thanks so much again for coming on, and I'll speak to you very soon.
Thank you, Mark. It's my pleasure.
You take care. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.